We've got the amazing Jill Cumnock, CEO of Ronald McDonald House in Dallas, gracing the Pressure Tested podcast today. We'll be uncovering the secrets to nonprofit leadership and the power of strong employee communication. The first thing I'm going to ask you, because I just want to jump right in, what motivated you to get into the nonprofit world?
You know, I think I actually kind of fell into it. When I graduated college, I thought I was going to be a child life specialist and went away and did an internship. And about halfway through that internship, I thought, I don't want to do this. And so one of the people that I met had been a milieu therapist on a child and adolescent psychiatric unit. And so I thought, that sounds kind of interesting. So I came back and 3 weeks later was working at Children's Medical Center on their psych unit. And from there, just started to kind of learn some different roles and some different things that were of interest to me. And it just kind of started the ball rolling.
What kind of therapist were you?
So it's called a milieu therapist, which is the type of environment we were in. So I was just really kind of the direct care person for, we had certain patients that were assigned to us that had a whole team that was working with them as they were on the psych unit. And I was kind of the one who was carrying out a lot of the directives from the social workers and the psychiatrists and psychologists.
Okay. So you mentioned a little bit on our phone call yesterday about some personal events that happened that you think have really kind of shaped where you went. You mentioned that you weren't real sure what you wanted to do when you were young, that maybe you were going to be a CPA. What happened with the accounting? Did you start that at all in school?
So I did. For one semester, I decided I was an accounting major, although one semester you're still taking your gen ed classes, so I really didn't get into anything. And for absolutely no apparent reason, I just thought, I don't want to sit behind a desk all day. That's not really what I want to do. So I decided I wanted to be a physical therapist. And so for the next year and a half, that was kind of the path I was on. And have never been so excited to make a C in my life as I was for chemistry. Two semesters of chemistry and beyond excited to pass. And so I, after 2 years in school, ended up transferring schools, but also decided that I was not a science-brained person. It was like a square peg, round hole. So when I transferred schools, I changed majors, and child life was a brand new field. There wasn't a degree yet for it. And so I was a child development and family relations major with the, you know, thought that I would work in a hospital with children and be a child life specialist until I decided that wasn't really what I wanted to do. So, but I do think that the whole, you know, my passion was always around children and families. And as a kid, spent a lot of time with my mom in hospitals because she was sick. And so I think I was comfortable in that setting, I guess.
Wow. So you, I want to talk a little bit about the Ronald McDonald House. Can you explain that charity? I was attempting to talk to somebody about it this morning. They didn't really know what it does. What do you guys do?
So we are a home away from home for families who are traveling to the Dallas area to seek medical care for their children. But we're really more than just a place to lay your head at night and a place to get a meal. We provide love and support to these families while they're going through what I think is one of the most difficult times of their lives. And I think one of the things that makes the Ronald McDonald House so special is that we provide this setting where these families can meet each other. And so they may be the only person from small town Texas or wherever they're coming from whose child has a certain diagnosis. But when they come to the Ronald McDonald House, they may meet somebody else whose child has the exact same diagnosis or at least somebody who's going through something similar. And I think that they just support each other. They help each other through this really difficult time. And so it's just, it's an amazing place. And it's not just our house. We also have a family room at Scottish Rite in Frisco and a hospitality cart at Cook Children's in Prosper and hospitality bags at Texas Health Frisco and another cart that's being delivered now to Medical City Frisco. So it's all about providing comfort items, comfort, support, anything that we can do to try to help families as they go through what is often one of the most difficult times in their lives.
When I was really appreciative that you let us walk through, I
I'm just a crier. Like, I remember you telling me the different stories, and I was so emotional. I was like looking away because I didn't want to cry, because it just, I think it's emotional for anybody. I think it's especially emotional for people who have children. And you kind of walk out of that, or I walked out that day feeling like I was just so blessed to have healthy kids. And I just, you know, if nothing else in my life ever worked out, like, I was just blessed to have healthy kids. How do you walk out of there every day and not take all of that home with you?
I think you have to learn how to do that. It's not something that you can do on day one. But I think that in order for me to be able to do what I do and to work with these families and all the different families that I've worked with over the years, you have to learn how to be compassionate and how to care about them, but not take the weight of the world onto your shoulders. Because if you do that, you're not going to be able to be strong for them. So I often just remind myself that, you know, I have to be able to, you know, leave it. I also don't want it to impact my own family. I don't want to go home and have all these worries on me, because I want to be present and available for my own family. So I think you just have to kind of learn how to be able to, you know, care when you're there. And of course you care when you're not there, and you sometimes think about them and worry about them. But you also have to know that you're doing absolutely as much as you possibly can. And, you know, you've got to take care of you in order to take care of them.
You said something yesterday on the phone. I've already mentally started doing this just with my own job, but you told me about the box visualization. Tell me about that one more time.
So when I was in graduate school, I took a class on, it was like relaxation, biofeedback, self-hypnosis, all those kinds of things. And so that's kind of where I learned this. And so I could work with folks on how to learn to relax and do all those different things. But for me, I had to create a way to just truly visually kind of take all these things that were in my head and on my heart that I was worried about with these different folks that I work with. And I would put it in this box. It was right outside my front door, close the lid, put a little lock on the box. I mean, visually, it would only take me a minute. So people didn't think I was a weirdo standing outside my front door. But I would just stand right out and just kind of do that. And so then when I walked in, I knew that it was still going to be there the next day, but I didn't have to carry it inside with me, and I could pick it up the next day as I was going to work. So it just kind of helped me with that. It's still going to be there, but I don't have to think about it all the time.
So that kind of leads me to my next topic, and I think about this a lot, but, you know, the average person, they get up in the morning and they go to work, and you know, they care about their company. They work hard. You know, mostly they're just interested in their company. And I'm a CFO, but mostly they're just interested in their company making a profit, right? And the real motivation of them being there every day and working hard is to one day get a promotion and to one day, you know, make more money so they can provide for their family. At the end of the day, it all kind of comes back to this idea of providing for your family. How do you feel that employees working in a nonprofit setting, or just employees in general that really believe in the company mission, how do you think that affects their work ethic and just their work-life balance?
Well, I think, first of all, I can tell you that every single person that works at the Ronald McDonald House of Dallas is there because they believe in our mission and they want to make a difference. And we do, you know, engagement surveys, and every single person will tell you that the favorite part of their job is the opportunity to get to know these families and to feel like you're making a difference in their lives. And so I think that that motivates us. And you know, I think it's a myth that, you know, just because you work at a nonprofit, you're not going to get paid very well. You know, we're a small budget, but we try to be as competitive as we can be with organizations that are our size, because the work that our folks do is really important. But it's not really the money that's motivating them. You know, right. We want to pay them well so that that money thing comes off the table. They're not worried about the money, but that they're really there to be able to, you know, help these families through this difficult time. And, you know, sometimes it's not as serious as it is with others. And I mean, it's fun. We get to, you know, when we have families that are there for, you know, extended periods of time, we experience a lot of firsts with them. We see their kids' first steps, their first words. Mm-hmm. You know, we get to be kind of, it's really a gift to be able to be a part of their family for a little while. And it's fun to watch these kids grow up and to have them come back and visit, or for the families to send photos. And You know, it's really an honor to be able to do what we do. And I think that, you know, everybody who works there would tell you the exact same thing, that that as much as, you know, we're there to help, we are all much more impacted by these families. And I think they're a blessing to us because we kind of see the world differently because of watching what they're going through.
I think that's amazing. I think it really answers my next question. So I was stalking your LinkedIn again today, and I saw that you had been at the company for 12 years. And so I just looked up this quick statistic, and it said that most people today will stay at their job for, it's like 2.75 years, and then they'll move on and go do something else. What has kept you fighting for this cause? And do you go through the things that other people go through? Any type of burnout or just... like, do you experience any of that in this role?
So, I mean, there's always times where you get a little burnout if you've got just too much on your plate and you're feeling a little worn out. But I can honestly say that, you know, I'd never expected to be here as long as I have been. But and I do think that Ronald McDonald House Charities in general is a global organization, retains employees much longer than most people do, most companies do. I have a lot of colleagues who have... been with RMHC for 15 to 30 years. I mean, the organizational leaders get there and a lot of them stay for a very long time. And I think part of it is because, obviously, because of the families. You know, our jobs every day is different. And then there's still so much growth with our organization. And so, you know, I've been able to, I was there when we opened our first family room, which will be 5 years next month that we opened that. And when we did a capital campaign and added 30 rooms onto this building so that we could serve more families, because we were turning 1,000 families a year away and we hated doing that. So got to help be a part of that and the construction, the fundraising, all of it. And so I think that there's just so many different things. And I just feel like even now we're looking at how can we better serve the northern market, because the hospitals are really growing out north and there's so many patients that are being treated up there. And so, you know, where do we build another house? And so it's all about, you know, there's so many people that we need to take care of. And so I'm just motivated to try to figure out how can I help make some of that happen.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I think that a lot of people talk about burnout and they say, you know, they either kind of run out of problems to solve, they run out of opportunity, or they just aren't given their thoughts don't matter as much. And I think that you kind of covered that all of those things don't happen there. That's fantastic. That's great. You could figure out how to make all companies like that. That would probably be really good. So something I wanted to touch on yesterday that we talked about is you said that you are really good in a stressful situation or a crisis. And it's really, this is like, I'm personally motivated to ask this question because I am the worst in a stressful situation. I'm the person that you don't want on your zombie apocalypse team. Like, I am not going to be there for you. And so my husband always jokes with me. He says, yes, we have two kids. He says, Kelly, look, something ever bad really happens, I need you to remember to grab one of the kids. He's like, I know you're going to be out the door, but I need you to just slow down long enough to remember to grab one of the kids. So do you think how did you become good in these stressful situations? And can you teach me how to be better in these terrible situations?
Well, I do think that, you know, we're all shaped by the things that have happened in our lives. And I think that, you know, because I had stressors early in my life, it kind of helped me figure out what was important and what to get stressed about and what not to. And I think some of it is just having that personality that you kind of roll with the punches kind of person, and you just don't get stressed out by things or just overly emotional about things. And not that I feel things and I feel them deeply, but I think it's when I see other people starting to get stressed or I see the stress, then it almost makes me more calm because I feel like that's what they need from me. And so I just, when I see that, I'm like, okay, I need to help them through this. So,
wow.
But I also just think that little things don't get to me. So, and I think working at the Ronald McDonald House has made that even better. So, for example, oh gosh, it was probably 10 years ago now, my son had gotten his second or maybe second or third concussion. And this was playing, I think it was his second. I think we decided if there was one more, he was done with sports. But one was a field day thing. And then this was a football concussion. And I had taken him to this concussion specialist. And it's really kind of scary when they do the testing and then they show you the results and you see how impaired their thinking is. And I was like, wow. I didn't realize how bad these concussions can be. So I had taken him home. He needed to sleep. And so I went into work for a few hours that afternoon and to get some stuff so I could stay at home the next day and be with him. And when I was walking around the Ronald McDonald House, I ran into this little boy. And so I just stopped to say hello and where are you from? And he was from El Paso. How old are you? He was the exact same age as my son. And I'm like, so what brings you here? You know, what's going on? And he was here for radiation for a brain tumor. I thought, wow, okay, well, I can handle this little concussion. Yeah. You know, it just kind of put it, not that the concussion wasn't important and a big thing for us, but in the scheme of life, he was going to recover from that concussion. Mm-hmm. But this little kid had brain tumor. So I do think that when you see these things, it almost forces you to kind of reevaluate and go, okay, is this really something that I need to get worked up about? Or can I just be calm in the storm and just kind of let's just push through and just kind of, and I also think it's the way you think about things mm-hmm. and, you know, just trying to, you know, breathe a little bit, you know, doing those relaxation classes really helped me because you kind of learn that. And so breathing and taking a minute has really helped. But I do think that, especially as somebody who's in a leadership role, if I were walking around stressed out all the time, it kind of trickles down. I mean, stress is contagious. And so I feel like it's my responsibility to be that calming presence so that we can have this calm, you know, workable atmosphere.
Well, I think that's, you know, a perfect lead into, we were talking a little bit before the podcast about the book Good to Great. And so, you know, Good to Great's claim to fame is he found this level 5 leadership. And he basically defines level 5 leadership as somebody who exhibits both personal humility and extreme will. And when I was talking to you yesterday, I just continually thought back to that because even the first time I sat down next to you, you're just extremely humble. And I can tell that that's kind of your management style. So how do you just continually put the needs of others ahead of your own?
Well, I mean, I think that's actually pretty easy because I think that our organization is only as good as the people that we have. Mm-hmm. And so they are the, you know, and so I find that I know early in my supervisory days when I was first in a leadership role and you still have all your other job to do, but you're also managing people. And it was, I often found I didn't have I didn't give enough time to the people. And so over the years, I've realized, you know, I have to give the time to the people because they're really who matters the most. And I can do the other work, even if it's late at night or on the weekend, I can do some of that stuff on my own time. But I have to make sure that I'm taking care of the people who work with me because otherwise we're not going to be a very good organization. So I think it's super important to, especially as somebody who supervises, to always make time for your employees. And when they come to you, you know, if you're working on the computer or you're doing whatever, you have to stop what you're doing. You have to really give them your full attention. They have to know that you're listening, that you care, that it matters, that they matter. I mean, again, if you have to take the time to really get to know your employees. And so, you know, we have employees who are working overnights or weekends or evenings. And so sometimes, I mean, some of these people I rarely ever see. So I always make a point of when we're hiring people that I spend about an hour with them to do a little orientation so I can share my vision and what I hope that they'll share with our families, you know, always err on the side of compassion, try to say yes, you know, kind of what my vision is for how I want families to be treated and volunteers and donors. And so, and then I check in with them again about 3 months later. I check in, you know, of course I have, you know, anytime they want to call me, email me, whatever, I want to be available. But I really want to get to know the people who are working for me because I think that, you know, they all matter. And we are, again, you know, I'm a true believer that I want the strongest people around me. It always only makes me look smarter, right? If I got these really good people doing what they're supposed to be doing, it makes me look a little bit better. And so I want to make sure that I'm taking good care of them because I want them to stay.
Well, you know, we had our conversation yesterday and you said, I know, I'll have to look down and read this. I've said it at least 5 times to myself and maybe a few times to anybody that would listen. But you said, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I was really blown away by that. I think that I've heard that a lot. But for some reason, it really resonated yesterday because I had this experience where somebody that's worked for me for a long time that I consider a personal friend, and I was late to a meeting. I had, you know, had a million things on my mind. And she stopped me in the hallway and she said, hey, you know, you haven't ever told me about my new title. And, I handled the situation totally wrong. I didn't have time to talk to her about it. I was like, well, you know, what do you want your title to be? Like, just, you know, tell me what you want, you know? And it's like, after you said that to me, I was like, that's so smart. Why, you know, it doesn't matter how much I know. It doesn't matter if I'm the loudest in the room. It doesn't matter if I'm the most knowledgeable. What matters is if the people in the room know I care about them. And so how do you think that you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but I mean, how do you shape your day around making sure the people know that you care about them? Because this, like, as basically a math person who needs to understand things in like the 1, 2, 3, like, how, you know, when you get to work, like, how do you make it a point to put the other people that work for you first?
Well, I like to always just, you know, check in with them. I mean, I have one employee whose father had a medical procedure yesterday. So, you know, the first, how's he doing? How's he recovering? Have you talked to him today? You know, two employees who have kids that just went off to college this year, both as freshmen. So checking in, you know, how are they doing? It's like if you know them and you take time to get to know what's going on in their lives, you know, it kind of makes it easier because you come in and you want to touch base with people. How are things, you know? And I think it's important to know, you know, your employees' kids' names, their spouse. I mean, really try to know who they are, know what it is that they're dealing with, and be, you know, empathetic towards that. And so if somebody's having a bad day, most often I'm going to know why they're acting that way. And I'm going to be able to just say, you know, sounds like, you know, you seem, you know, stressed today. I know this is going on. What can I do to help you? How can I support you? We also have a house dog. We have our chief cheer officer, Shiloh.
Oh, I love that.
If I see somebody who's really stressed, and even if, you know, whether I know what the reason is or not, you know, sometimes just taking Shiloh over to them at their desk is always a good thing because, you know, being around animals, you release oxytocin and it lowers your blood pressure. So animals are really good when you're stressed. So it's great that we have a dog at work.
That's great.
I do think that, you can't not make the time for your people.
I really love hearing this because I feel like as someone who's read a lot of books and, you know, just subscribed to a lot of different like business models, you know, you have this idea of, well, if you get too close to the people that work for you, then you can't make good decisions. And I think that, you know, that's kind of an older mindset that's getting pushed away. But I love to hear that you are successful by caring about your employees. I think that that's really important to hear.
I almost think that when they know that and when you do care, I think sometimes having the difficult conversations is easier because they know that it's you're coming at it and, you know, you care about them.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, I just got in trouble again today or, you know, because you're just, you know, that you call somebody into your office and you have to have a teachable moment or correct something or whatever. I think that they almost take it better because they know that you're caring about them and you're helping them grow, you're helping them learn, you're, you know, and they just seem to receive the information that much better.
Yeah, of course they do. That's genius. I don't know why I've never thought about it like that because, you know, the idea is, you know, you're not going to be able to discipline them or have those hard conversations if you're close to them. And I think your theory completely blows that out of the water.
Well, I mean, I had an employee, somebody that I supervised, come to me today because she was really upset with something that I said to her yesterday.
Oh, no.
And so I said, I'm so glad you came to me and that you felt comfortable enough coming to me. And I apologized. I said, that is not at all that was not my intent. Here's what I was thinking. And I said, and I've been doing a lot of thinking about this situation, and I have some ideas on how we can make this better for next year. And so we kind of talked through that. But I was like, and again, at the end, I'm like, thank you for coming. And because, you know, she's like, well, it was really bothering me, and I didn't want to hold on to that and be angry. And so I just thought it was great that she was able to come, and that we, you know, and she and I have worked together for a very long time, and we get along really well. But anybody who, you know, it's kind of like a family. Every now and then you say something that hurts somebody's feelings. So
definitely.
So I was glad that I had a chance to apologize. And
well, and if you hadn't established the relationship to begin with, I know exactly what she would have done. She would have walked around being upset and mad. And I think that, you know, is whenever you feel like your leaders don't hear you, I think it creates just, you start putting all of these things in your mind about how it's not fair, and it becomes a matter of fairness, and there's just so much to it. Okay, I'm going to throw you for a loop on this one, but you, so first time we met, we were at that stuffy luncheon, and I was just so enamored with this idea that you were the CEO of a big nonprofit company, because I think that somewhere in my mind, I've always wanted to get back to working for some type of nonprofit. And of course, you know, in my daydream that I'm telling you about, I'm like, I'm going to start a nonprofit, you know, I'm going to change the world. And you're like, okay, stop. Don't start a nonprofit, join one. And I thought that was really interesting advice. Why did you tell me that?
Well, there are thousands of nonprofits in the Dallas area alone. There are so, so many. And you know, there is likely a nonprofit out there that's doing something that you'd be thinking about, or 10 of them. And there's only so many dollars out there for people to give. And so, you know, and there's even funders out there that are all about encouraging the collaboration, because mm-hmm. they see that. They see that we need to be working together and not against each other to be able to help folks. And so, you know, I'm a social worker by trade mm-hmm. after, you know, undergrad. I went and got my master's in social work. And so, you know, trying to think about, you know, I am all about helping people. But also, I think in order for us to do that, we've got to work together to make that happen. So I do think that, and over the years, I've had so many people come to me either because they want to leave their for-profit job and mm-hmm. get into the nonprofit because they want to do something where they feel like they'll make a difference, mm-hmm. or they want to start a nonprofit because they've got this great idea. And so I've had so many conversations, and sometimes I'm like, that's a gap. I think mm-hmm. that's a great idea. I don't think there's anybody out there doing that. And I think, you know, that's, you know, how can I support you and, you know, getting to where you, because there are some people who have these ideas, and there are definitely some gaps in service out there. I couldn't tell you what they are off the top of my head, but there's definitely some. But when somebody's wanting to do something that somebody else is already doing, mm-hmm. I just think that go work with that other, pick an organization, go help them do that bigger or better or for more people or, but, you know, I think that it's always, you know, it's, you know, coming from a place of goodness. And so I always appreciate that somebody's wanting to do stuff for others. But
right.
I think, you know, always encourage people to do their homework on it before they jump in.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. So something you mentioned a second ago, and I feel like this is probably like a dirty word, nonprofits, but like fundraising. How is it? I mean, so your entire budget comes from donations. How much pressure do you feel to secure those donations?
Oh, a lot. You know, we don't have a product to sell. We don't have a service to sell. I mean, we don't have a way to just generate revenue.
Right.
So other than rely on the generosity of this incredible community that we live in, who hopefully care about other people and will want to help. And so, you know, when for fundraising, it is a nonstop, mm-hmm. always on that treadmill, you know, whatever. I mean, you can't stop or you're going to hit the wall. And you know, I think it's easy for us to be motivated at the Ronald McDonald House because we see the people that we're working for every day.
Yes.
You know, I think that if I were working at some corporate office for some nonprofit, it would be so much harder versus being right where the people are. So I think that, and we always have a family speak. We had one talk to us this week for our staff meeting. We have families come in and speak at every board meeting because I think that we all need those mission moments to stay focused on why we do what we do. But fundraising is hard because we're working on budgets right now, and it's like, so, you know, we know how much we need to spend, so then we know how much we have to raise.
Right.
And so can we realistically do that? And sometimes it's always like, oh gosh, I really, you know, sometimes we'll make a really aggressive fundraising budget with the hope and the prayer that we're going to be able to get it. And sometimes, you know, I often say sometimes there's just some of this Ronald McDonald House of Dallas magic that just happens when we think we're struggling and we're like, how are we going to do this? And something will happen.
That's great.
And make it all work. But I think it is fundraising. It's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I've been through different struggles with cash flow, and I just can't imagine, you know, I just can't imagine it. Like, it scares the heck out of me to think that I would be just, you know, my responsibility would be to bring the money into the organization. Like, my responsibility is not to bring the money in here. It's to count the money. Like, that's all I have to do. I just have to count it. Somebody else has to bring it in. So I can't imagine depending on other people to bring that money. And that's got to be really tough. I stumbled on an article from D Magazine where they had an interview with you, and you were talking about the trains at North Park. And one of the questions was about how important corporate giving is to the Ronald McDonald House. And, you know, this is something that we've kind of, Moss Utilities has been through a lot the last 6 years. And, you know, we kind of started not really making any money. And gradually we've gotten to a point where now we can do things like give to charity. What advice would you have for companies looking to get involved with corporate giving? Where would you tell them to start?
Well, I think they need to look at what their company values are, mm-hmm. and then try to find a nonprofit that aligns with those values. And also to kind of think about what it is that they hope to achieve by getting involved with a nonprofit. And I would say, when I say get involved, giving money is great, but giving your time is also very much needed. And so, and I do think that having opportunities for employees to get engaged and to volunteer, especially a lot of these younger employees, that they want to do that. They're mm-hmm. looking for that. So if you can provide opportunities like that, so it doesn't always have to be the money, but obviously the money helps. but also, you know, we rely heavily on volunteers. For the trains at North Park, that is probably 1,400 volunteers.
Oh, because, I didn't know that.
Because, you know, we have an exhibit manager, but then we're open, you know, 10 hours a day. And we have, you know, 6 to 8 volunteers, you know, for these different shifts throughout the day. So it takes a lot of volunteers to make that exhibit run. And so, and we have volunteers at the house and groups and, you know, that cook meals or will host an activity. And, you know, so we need corporate partners who will, you know, donate money, who will, you know, provide some service hours, you know, who will match dollars that their employees give. I mean, there's so many different ways that corporations can get involved besides just giving their own money. You know, we have some corporations who will put on a third party event and raise funds for our organization, which is amazing mm-hmm. because, you know, we have a small fundraising staff. And
right.
so when somebody does a third party event and we're, you know, we're there to support them, but we're the recipient of those funds. That's amazing. But
definitely,
I do think that the opportunity to give your employees these volunteer activities that they can go do, it's much more impactful than I think most people would realize, especially when they come and cook a meal. That's one of the favorite things that people do at the Ronald McDonald House.
Yeah, I'm trying to get Garrett to do that. I think I mentioned I'm not much of a cook, but we're gonna find something
that
we can make.
Well, we now have a chef program.
Oh, that's great.
And so now corporations, all they have to do is pay a set amount for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. It's different for each meal. And then our chef plans the menu, purchases all the food,
nice.
And is there to help guide the group through the cooking experience.
That's
and then
amazing.
You're there to serve the families, get
yes.
to know them, all
great.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. We're definitely going to do that. I can't wait to do that. What about for the Christmas season? Do you guys have any needs for the Christmas season?
So we give out toys to all of our mm-hmm. families. So a lot of times these families that are staying with us over the holidays, you'd think that it'd be empty.
No.
We're usually very full around the holidays, especially because it's a winter break. And so kids are out of school. So if there's something that they can do during a break, they do that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But we also have families who, you know, they don't plan to be with us. And so either or and who knows what's been going on, but either they've not had time to shop. They did shop, but the toys are in whatever state they came from, not here with them. So we create this little toy store for our families, and they get to pick out, you know, toys for all the kids. And so toys are a big thing. And, you know, doing some fun, you know, holiday activities, you know, groups that'll come in and host, you know, gingerbread decorating.
Oh, that's
cookie
fun.
Decorating.
Or, I love that.
Know, all those kinds of things. So those are definite holiday needs that we have.